We're on page three. Page three, we have been looking at the text, some of the texts that Paul wrote in the New Testament on parenting. And so, back on page two, we had been going through Ephesians 6, 1 through 4. And we're kind of at the tail end of that. Verse 4, Paul writes to the fathers, "Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord." Okay? Bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. And so we were kind of in the middle of talking about the what are the aspects of discipline and instruction, right? So what's we're on question 11 there. What is meant really by discipline? What is its objective and how is it accomplished? So take a second, we'll look at these verses. I'm talking about discipline, the discipline and instruction of the Lord. So, let's see. You guys have all got handouts? Can you read it for me here? What do we, 2 Timothy 3:16? I need somebody. Abe. And then Hebrews 12, 10 through 11. Okay. Timothy. All right. Go ahead, Abe.
"All scripture is breathed out by God and profitable for teaching, for reproof, for correction, and for training in righteousness."
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
"For they disciplined us for a short time as it seemed best to them, but he disciplines us for our good, that we may share his holiness. For the moment, all discipline seems painful rather than pleasant, but later it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it."
Yeah, so we get some of that there in terms of what it is and what it's useful for. So what do you see in the verses there? What are some of the motivations or the reasoning behind discipline? What's the purpose of it? Just what do you see in the text? It's profitable. So we see that the word is profitable for teaching, for reproof, and then correction and training. So we have all those uses. And discipline is really connected to that correction aspect, mm-hmm. right? That correction, we can be corrected from wrongdoing, wrong thinking, wrong speaking. And then look at the Hebrews text. What do we see about, what's the purpose really? What is the results that we want for discipline?
The peaceful fruit of righteousness.
Mm-hmm. So we want to see fruit of righteousness, right? What else? There's a couple other things.
Share in his holiness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we see peaceful. Share in his holiness. There's no dot over the O. and I think there's another one. He disciplines us.
For our good.
Yeah, it's for our good. We saw up above that it's profitable. And what can sometimes be the challenge behind discipline? We talked about this just a little bit. You see it a little bit in the Hebrews text.
You don't want to be disciplined.
Usually we don't. We don't like to be corrected or disciplined.
Painful.
It's painful. Yes. Hmm. For the moment, all discipline seems painful. And you might argue whether it's more painful to the discipliner or the disciplinee or to both, right? But it's an unpleasant experience. So then that's supposed to be paired with instruction. So our discipline, our correction is then paired with instruction. So let's look at this text, a couple of texts that talk about instruction. So you have 1 Corinthians 10 and Titus 3. So Dan, you want to get that 1 Corinthians 10 passage?
Yep.
And then Nathaniel, you can get the Titus 3. Go ahead.
"We must not indulge in sexual immorality as some of them did, and 23,000 fell in a single day. We must not put Christ to the test, as some of them did and were destroyed by serpents, nor grumble as some of them did and were destroyed by the destroyer. Now these things happened to them as an example, but they were written down for our instruction, on whom the end of the age has come.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then it goes really nice with Titus 3:10. Go ahead.
As for a person who stirs up division, after warning him once and then twice, have nothing more to do with him.
Yeah, so in both cases, right, you have this instruction, and you kind of get a feel for what's the purpose of it. Right? So you have all these examples, they're written down for our instruction. You have the divisive man who's warned. So it's really to, in a sense, like protect us, in one sense. Right? Don't do this that we've done, right? Do this, right? And we also see what it leads to. So when we are talking about instructing our kids in the scriptures, we're helping them to see what they should and shouldn't do, and also what the consequences oftentimes might be, right? What could happen, what does happen, what comes from these actions. Like we see in the 1 Corinthians passage, these things happen to them as an example, and then they're written down for our instruction, right? So that we can see and learn from their mistakes, right? And then in verse 4, it gives that little phrase, what type of discipline and instruction is it to be?
Of the Lord.
Yeah, of the Lord. So content-wise, it's not just the most recent parenting book, right? Or it's not just the psychology you learn in your developmental psychology class, or right? We want to make sure that what we're teaching them is the instructions of the Lord, the discipline instruction of the Lord. And then there's a warning or a clause there, right? Why do you suppose Paul includes the command not to provoke your children along with the directive to bring them up in the discipline instruction? Why do you think that's necessary, or why did he include that? Do not provoke.
You're not setting a good example if you're provoking them.
Mm-hmm. What does he say not to provoke them to?
Anger.
Yeah, wrath or anger, depending on your transition. Do not provoke your children to anger. Why? Why is that such an important part of? He could have said a lot of things, you know, not to do, but.
So they respond positively to discipline. If it's just a disciplining out of anger,
mm-hmm.
And you're just harsh and not directional. I mean, a lot of times it's just don't do this, punishment,
mm-hmm.
and no directional
mm-hmm.
instruction.
Mm-hmm.
Then that can harden their heart, and they don't benefit from the discipline.
Right. Okay. So we've got this: do not provoke, or what's the other word that you sometimes use?
Exasperate.
Exasperate. Exasperate, right? And you shared a little bit, like, one of the ways we can provoke is that we can be harsh and just know there's no real love or caring or kindness behind it. Or I think you also mentioned that it can be provoking to just do discipline without instruction, where don't do this. Well, what am I supposed to do, right? What should I do? What are some other ways that we can avoid provoking our kids? Anger, things that we can think of when we're both disciplining or instructing. What's there some important things to remember?
I would say, practically speaking, nobody listens when they're angry. So it doesn't matter who you are, if you're angry, it's just you'll never listen.
Your brain just kind of shut down to.
So if you want to instruct them, you can't instruct them when they're angry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Probably, and maybe for both the discipliner and the. And the receiver, yeah. So being mindful of our emotional state and when is the right time to instruct is a key thing. What else?
Just
Yeah.
We've been demanding too much from our kids.
Okay. Being a perfectionist. Yeah, God, why don't you guys take a second and flip towards the back. There is an appendix. Right? And it's ways that we, see it there on page 9, ways we exasperate or ways we can provoke. Right? So if you are a parent, brace yourself, right? As you read through this list, asking yourself, do I ever do this? Do I ever do this? I tried to, I took our three oldest kids and I tried to ask them, okay, guys, in what ways? You could tell they were leery to say, never. It's okay. So there's a few things that they would say, well, you know, it's very rare, but maybe once in a while, some of these things, right? There was a couple they said, well, never. But there was this one time, I think, that they said, okay, all right, yes, I remember that. But if you look through there, right, do any of those really stand out to you as this is something that's common, it can be a struggle you see in parents that can really exasperate kids? Yeah, lack of consistency. That's number 7. And the idea there behind that, we've got the verse Ecclesiastes, where because the sentence against an evil deed is not executed quickly, therefore the hearts of the sons of men among them are given fully to do evil. So there's a couple ways we can be inconsistent. One is that individually as parents, sometimes I discipline them right away for something. Other times I wait half an hour, and other times I skip. That's inconsistent because they're really not sure what is this right or is this wrong, right? Is this a big deal or is it not? And then the other inconsistency is like between spouses. Maybe dad always disciplines for this and mom doesn't, or vice versa, right? That could be, it's difficult. Because really our discipline is really defining for our kids what is right and what is wrong. What does mom and dad tolerate? What do they not tolerate? And that discipline is them feeling, oh, that's where the line is. Okay, I've crossed the line here, I've crossed the line here. And when sometimes it isn't, they're like, well, where is the line? Did I sin here or did I not? What else? Do you see anything else that you, I think it's important to kind of look through this list and be thoughtful that there may be things in here that you don't really realize how exasperating or how it can be frustrating to your kids if we do these things.
I think a lot of parents are convinced that my kids will not obey unless I yell at them. That's the only way to get them to do what they need to do. Mm-hmm. And even if that is true, you still shouldn't yell.
Mm-hmm.
That just has to be an absolute standard. Otherwise, you just get a family where it's just open conflict, yelling. There's no peaceful fruit of righteousness in that family.
Yes. And with yelling and some of these other ones in terms of like getting our kids to obey, sometimes it may be true that that's what they respond to because that's what we have trained them to respond to. That mom and dad are serious when they yell. And until they do, they're not. And so that I know that it can be difficult parenting, and also it's always something my kids have to get used to in my classroom at school, that I am serious even though I'm calm at the first time. And they're like, but you didn't yell at me. I'm like, no, but I told you. So they're like, well, I thought I don't know. So just helping them understand when I say it the first time, it needs to be obeyed. That type of thing. What else?
Busy doing all these other things in the house or whatever it is, and we're not actually giving the time to listen. listen to them or to look them in the eye.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's several of these that are lack, right? It's where we're missing a positive one. So like number 5, lack of encouragement. Number 10, lack of affection. I know that since the decade of smartphones, there's been some sociological studies, and I've seen some clips where it's like the kid, it's kind of like if you've ever been reading a book and the cat jumps on top of the book to get your attention, you know, and the kid like comes between the parent and the phone and like tries to get their attention. They're just waving them off, right? Waving them off. So a lot of times bad behavior is kind of just, I want some attention, right? I'll do whatever I need to get that attention. I'd say if you look at number 6, lack of standards. So the law of the Lord is perfect, reviving the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. This is on page 10. God gives us his law to help us worship him and also to put our lives in order. Living under the law of God will bring our children much joy and happiness. And they need us to spell out what that means for them at each stage of life. Without clear standards, chaos will reign and they'll be enslaved to their own sinful desires. And then J.C. Ryle has this quote from Duties of Parents. He says, a child knows not yet what is good for his mind and his soul, any more than he knows what is good for his body. You don't let him decide what he shall eat and what he shall drink or how he shall be clothed, right? Kids, when they're really young, they just need you to tell them, this is what's right and this is what's wrong. This is what you eat and this is what you drink, right? And I kind of laughed at that a little bit because I think, well, I've seen a lot of parents that just completely give free rein to the kids. What would you like to eat? What would you like to drink? What would you like to wear? And a kid, it's very unloving because it overloads them because they have no clue. They have no clue what they want to eat or what to drink or what. And then they get whatever they ask for and that doesn't make them happy. And that's even more frustrating. So giving the kids choice when they're not ready, it's like a weight. It's a burden of responsibility. Every choice is a responsibility. And everything that you throw on your kids, the younger they are, the more choices, they crumble under that weight. And so when it's really provoking to our kids to make them make all the decisions, right? Mm-hmm. It is it's a huge blessing as they're very young. You make all the decisions, and then as they grow, they make more and more decisions because they've learned from the choices and the values that you kind of passed on to them. So just kind of a soapbox there a little bit is that, again, when your kids are little, you have to tell them and teach them what's right, what's good, what they need for their body and their mind and their spirit. And eventually, when they show that they are, you know, obedient in those choices, they begin to make those choices themselves, and they can become more and more free. Yeah.
There have been several times where, like, I've been holding a standard for Ryle that I realized I wanted to change.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it was too strict, maybe it was too loose. How do you change standards without it seeming like he's wild and inconsistent?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, one way is it does depend a lot on their age, right? And so the younger they are, the less talking really that you have to do with them because they won't be able to understand as much. So part of it when they're really young is like that consistency issue. You and your wife, you have a discussion about, you know, what have we been doing and how does that need to change? So for an example for us, we might have been holding a standard at one time where it was more lax. And no, they need to, we tell them to do this, we needed them to do it right away, and they're not used to that. So it's rough. Sometimes we just know there's going to be a rough transition where, okay, we tell them and say, you know, you might tell them one time, when we've been letting you do this, but really we want you to do it the first time. And then from there on out, it's you just changing the way in which you respond. You discipline and instruct every time they don't do it the first time. If you've been overly strict, again, the same thing. Part of it is when they're really young, like at this age, there may be you just aren't applying the discipline or correction at that same level anymore, if you felt like you were being overly perfectionistic in a sense. But when they're older, sometimes you realize something, and that's where you kind of have those age-appropriate discussions. I know that sometimes when our kids, we realize that it's a great chance to see and model your parents conforming their life to the scriptures. So we would say, I know we've always done this, but I've seen from the scriptures, and I would point out where it is in the scriptures, that, you know, it's a soft answer turns away wrath, and these harsh words are like bars of iron. And I've been using harsh words sometimes to get you guys to obey, and I'm not going to be doing that anymore. And we want you guys to respond when we're calm, and right? So we talk through them, and that may be, for us, the instruction always would, we always had instruction that followed discipline. So if they were not reacting the right way, would it point out what they did wrong and give them a consequence or a spanking if they're really young, and then talk about what should they do? What should they do? And sometimes there's a lot of that when they're really young. There's a lot of practicing that's involved. So when they weren't doing the quite the way we wanted to, part of that instruction was we would say, let's try it again. And we would kind of pretend like the scenario was happening again and get them to act the way that we wanted them to do.
And like if you're switching the way, you know, your standards, you can make it a game at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Like, let's practice.
Right,
like,
yeah.
And laughing and mm-hmm. joy and, you know, even when they're really young, you can, mm-hmm. you know, they're gathering that obeying is joyful mm-hmm. and
yeah.
you can have fun.
Yeah, one recently that we, like with Ben, there was a time where we realized that we were responding to what? You know, Ben, what? And we're like, let's have him say yes, mama, or yes, daddy. Mm-hmm. And so there was a stage where Ben, what? Yes, yes, daddy. You know, like, okay, it's close. You know, he's getting there. And so there's kind of that practicing stage and adjusting and talking about, do you want your kids to say, like my mom always talks about, she's down in Texas, everybody's yes ma'am and yes sir. So what do you want from them? And you just train it and practice it. That can change. Well, those are, I mean, I would encourage you, it can be convicting, but look through this list and this appendix. It's really fantastic to look at verses, because there's things that you may not realize that you are doing that can be super exasperating to our kids, right? And even if we're perfect, right, they're not going to perfectly respond, but this really sets them up so that it makes it as easy as possible for them to obey. And so kind of question 16 here, kind of getting back to page 4, why is it so important for fathers? Because this verse 4 was to fathers. Fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but raise them in discipline and instruction of the Lord. Why is it so important for fathers to realize that God's holding them accountable as parents? And specifically fathers here, why is that so important?
Has given the father the role of the head of the household, and he has a responsibility to nurture and lead his family.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that's the cultural norm or expectation of fathers? Be the spiritual leader? I think we talked about a little bit, maybe in the introduction, about how, like, the guy was studying the children's books, and what's the typical pop culture view of the father?
Homer Simpson.
Yeah, kind of Homer Simpson. He's either like an idiot, or he's one of the kids, right? Or sometimes I have seen where the father is this silent, hardworking, at work all the time, and the mom does all the parenting, mm-hmm. right? Dad comes home and me alone while I watch TV and watch the game, and talk to your mother, right? And there's a whole, I was listening to a comedian, he did this whole bit about how the school calls the dad. And he's like, you call the dad? You know, this is a question for the moms, right? And how the dad is just kind of removed from everything, right? And so scripturally, right, you can see that Paul is making this command to the fathers to raise them up in the discipline and instruction, right? So both parents are particularly accountable here.
Yeah, and strict egalitarianism is really a myth, because in that environment, either somebody's going to lead. And if you believe that all people are equal, then the kids should have the same say
right.
about family decisions as the mom and dad.
Yeah.
And then you start deferring to the most selfish, assertive person in the family, and often that might be the only child or
right.
something like that.
You'd never have more than two kids because they'd always outvote you, you know, if it's all egalitarian.
Yeah.
Who wants to go to bed right now? No, no.
Yes, you are violating my rights, mom and dad.
Right.
You know, they can learn the language.
Yeah.
So somebody has to be accountable. And I think, you know, one thing, like the dad's responsible. That doesn't mean he has to do the bulk of the parenting, but he's still responsible
right.
for whatever is happening.
Mm-hmm.
If he notices, you know, his wife is yelling at the kids or something like that, he's the one who has to take action.
Yeah.
Yeah. And ultimately, when there's no higher authority, then he's held accountable for that.
Yeah, and we, as recipients of this command today, in our time, in our culture, right, it really corrects, I think, to bring the fathers in, to get them more involved, to take more leadership, more responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
There's a note here at the bottom, on page 4, thinking about the context, we're getting ready to get into reading Colossians. And so, in the note, you have the Greek Jews, the Hellenistic Judaism. Parents were considered as superiors, like seniors, rulers, or benefactors, and masters. And children really occupied this lower position, juniors, subjects, receivers of the benefits, and slaves. Parents were to children as God is to the world. The fathers had right to upbraid or severely admonish, as well as to beat or to degrade or even lock up their children. So that was kind of the Greek Hellenistic view of parents. Now, despite the severity of Greek parental control, the Romans thought that the Greeks were somewhat lax regarding the attitude of children. In the Roman family, the father had absolute control over all his family. The father's control over the son was for life. He could imprison him, scourge him, shame him, punish him, sell him to slavery up to 3 times, or have him killed. So that's a very different culture in terms of family structure that Paul was writing to. And so for us, we were kind of focusing on parents, fathers should take a more active role, have more leadership. But here, some of these commands were very shocking, that he's holding fathers accountable, saying that they have standards that they need to submit to as well, that they ought to love their wives in an understanding way, that they ought not to provoke their children to wrath, would probably be pretty offensive.
Yeah, and before you didn't have SRS if there's child abuse. You didn't call the police for spousal abuse. I mean, the father was the strongest person in the family, and he could use violence to do whatever he wanted and basically get his way every time.
Right.
So a lot of these rules were meant to tame the father to make sure that he didn't use his strength to overpower, overrun, exasperate, and really terrorize the family.
And you'll notice, like as Dave's talking about it, it gave a limiting to this, you know, complete and ultimate authority that the fathers had at the time. But in these household codes, you see that he gives directions to wives and to servants and to kids, but in each one he gives a corresponding command to the head of the house. Mm-hmm. So servants are to act this way, masters are to behave in this way. Wives, you're to do this. Husbands, right, usually the same person, you're to live this way. Children, fathers. So he gives 3 different commands, all to the husband, to the father, to the master. And so as a father, you're like 3 times accountable in that era, accountable to how to treat your wife, accountable for how you raise your kids, accountable for how you treat your slaves or your employees, you could equate to. Okay. Well, let's look at the kind of the companion. So we looked at Ephesians, right? Ephesians 6:1, children obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. And now we're looking at Colossians. And so as we get approach Colossians 3, we can see before we get to the children in verse 20, he's kind of concluding his view of the Christian community in verse 7. Whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks through him to God the Father. So that's wrapping up that everything you're doing is to be done in the name of the Lord, giving thanks to God the Father. And now he's going to address, like we said, the household, husbands, wives, fathers, children, slaves, masters, and instructing them how to set their minds on things above. That's how he started that chapter of Colossians 3. Set your mind on things above. So, Colossians 3, 20 and 21. Somebody want to read that for me? Leo, you get this one?
Children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord. Fathers, do not provoke your children, lest they become discouraged.
So we see almost the same wording. So I guess one question is, why or how? Why does a child's obedience please the Lord? It says that... this pleases the Lord. Why? What is it? It's good for your kids to know.
Obedience is what God asked of his children from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
It's always been a priority.
Mm-hmm. He wants us to be obedient children.
Good.
Yeah.
That's a suppression of their
mm-hmm.
good nature. When you just kind of look at children and see that that's not the case, then authority is inherently good for their lives because it's teaching them how to live a life of authority. So it's kind of leading them away from their flesh.
Yeah, okay, that's a really good point. And it really does illustrate that, you know, I've talked about how, like, the family is the training ground for all other structures. And that, you talked about how it's a problem in a world where the child is good. The child is, right? And so if the person who's supposed to be subject to the authority is morally good, morally right, if there's nothing wrong with this person, then this authority is like there's no need for it, and it's often viewed like the big buzzword now is oppression. All authority, the government is oppressive, right? Parents can be oppressive, husbands who are in a role of authority over their wives, they can be, it's all oppression because this person doesn't need or shouldn't have, or there's all these wrong structures. It's all about power. And so the way we view authority really reflects upon whether or not it pleases, right? And so, in the other way, like I think Chris has said, God created his children to be obedient. And he created, we see in other places that God created the family, he created the church, he created the government. And so he created all these structures of authority. And when we teach our kids, and when our kids are obedient, we're submitting to God's representatives, just in the same way that we can talk to them about. When I submit to the government and its authority, or when I submit to the leadership in my church, I'm pleasing the Lord, because that's the authority that he's given me. Given that Paul clearly commands children to obey their parents, why could this be scary for some kids?
If their parents are not parenting,
mm-hmm.
according to a loving standard, then can be pretty scary.
Yeah, very much so. you think about other authority issues, there may be times where, let's say you're an employee, sometimes you can quit and go find another boss. Or maybe you're in a church, and maybe you have the freedom to go and submit to a different set of elders, right? If you're looking and evaluating husbands, right, as to who you're willing to submit to. So there's a certain vulnerability with kids where they don't have any choice as to who their parents are and how wherever their parents act, they don't get a, I think I'm going to go next door to be parented by somebody else, right? They're stuck there, and it can be scary, right?
Well, and I think also if a child does not know that their parent is accountable to someone, so that was something we reminded them regularly, that we are accountable to God for your behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And if the parent does not, isn't accountable to anybody, and they're just accountable to themselves, then that's scary.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Then they're operating out of their flesh.
Yeah. And our kids will see that we're not perfect, right? They still are going to see our flaws. And if, like you said, if we're not subject or submissive to anyone or anything, then that makes it even more scary. And you bring up a really good point about, like, that's a great thing to teach your kids in terms of, like, when we always would talk about, is it ever okay to disobey mommy and daddy? You know, and that person, no. I'm like, well, we would always teach them that if we ever tell you to sin, right, to not do something that you've been commanded to, or to do something that God says you must not do, then you can disobey us, right? That God is our authority, he's your authority first, and we're representing him. And so it tries to put us just in that link to connect. We really want them to be submissive to God, and we're just kind of a means of teaching that submission, right? And if they can learn that authority represents God, then it helps them make that connection. My teachers or my elders or this the government. Thought, no?
I think it's really helpful if they, I mentioned this before, but if they know that you are holding yourself accountable to other people that they can see and that they love. Like, for my kids to know, like, Dave and Becky, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
They know that we're doing this. We know that they do this with their kids. You know, like, when you're living in community, that helps kids, I think, to know that you love them.
Mm-hmm.
Those people that you know love their kids are doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it is you're asking them to live by faith.
Mm-hmm.
Children don't understand the long-term implications of some of their decisions like their parents do.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. And even if the parents are wrong on this, if it pleases the Lord, God will make it right in some way in the end.
Yeah. Yeah. Not understanding, you know, the implications. There's going to be, at every age level, there's going to be things where they don't know why, right? Why do I have to do this? Or why do I not do this? Well, we're just telling you it's right, it's what God wants, and this is how we want you to live. And it may take years before, sometimes even before they're out of the house, right? Especially if it's something in their teen years that you're working through with them that they just kind of don't see, can't see 5, 10, 15 years down the road. It may be a while.
We've had kids occasionally when you talk about if we ask you to sin, you know, obviously that's your point, and then so there's been several, Dad, but me doing, isn't this a sin? It's like, no, it's not. Nice try, though.
That's right. That's right. Nice try. Nice try. We had one kid where the one of the siblings was singing, and it was just driving them crazy. And I think they're singing, "We all live in a yellow submarine," all the way in the van. And
isn't that a non-Christian song?
Well, they said, "Dad, they are lying. We do not live in a yellow submarine. Make them stop right now. Perform your duties." Right? Turn it around on you. Get them. So, but the nice thing, right, for kids too, is that in both of these passages, right, what's the protection that they see? What's Paul give in this particular verse? We saw it early in Ephesians. What's he say in the Colossians verse here? What's the wording?
Say that one more time.
What is the protection he gives to kids? What's the command he gives to the fathers here in Colossians text? Yeah, yeah. And here, he doesn't say do not provoke them to anger, but he just says do not provoke them lest they what? Lest they become discouraged, right? And we talked about a little bit that, you know, in verse 21 it says obey them. What's the qualifier? Obey your parents. In everything, right? So that can be super scary, but it's a very helpful as a parent, right? To talk to kids, right? God wants you to obey us in everything. What? Right? Really? Right? And then, you know, going back to the verses before, you can talk about how, you know, whatever we're doing, we're supposed to do it in the name of the Lord. And so trying to mirror those things together, that we're doing this to teach you how to follow the Lord. And it's helpful for them because, like, they might not, where in the Bible does it say we have to go to bed at this time or we need to eat my broccoli or whatever it is. But just realizing that living by faith and trusting the authority over you, you don't have it all written out in the scriptures. There's just a blanket submission to that authority of the parental, of mom and dad. Right. So here, and what do you think? We saw how. What's the difference in, like, the result of provoking that he mentions here? What can happen? We saw wrath, anger, but what else?
Discouragement.
Yeah, they can kind of, like, the fight or flight type of thing. Like, some of them are going to want to fight with you and get angry, but some of them may just kind of wilt if we provoke them, right? We don't encourage them, we're inconsistent in any of those things. So that's kind of one of those, this commentator says, the state of discouraged to go about their tasks in a listless, moody, sullen frame of mind. I see a lot of kids where they're just kind of, there's just no joy to do it. Like when nothing they do is going to result in anything positive or being encouraged or being praised, or they don't see the discipline as love. It's just do what my mom and dad say. They kind of lose that sense. There's the discouragement that can kind of settle in for a long term. I've seen a couple stories where people, they look at the school pictures. You know how they used to have the school bus that had first grade, second grade, third grade? I don't know, that's dating me. But they had the school pictures, and you could see they're happy, and then they're kind of, they can really become discouraged when we are provoking them constantly, right, as parents. All right, so is there anything at home that you guys see? You've seen it in other families, or at times when you've done it, when maybe you've done something to provoke your kids. What are some signs that you can see that you've been exasperating our kids? Can you think of things that these are like little red flags, warning lights, that maybe something I'm doing might be exasperating?
No, we've seen probably just general sadness,
mm-hmm.
more so, and maybe even more emotional, like cry easier,
uh-huh.
you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if they're just generally sad, and maybe they cry a lot easier than in the past. Mm-hmm. What else can be?
Anxiety or fear.
Oftentimes, if we have that perfectionist type of holding unbiblical high standards that I think in one of the ways you can exasperate, there's some notes about how we want to hold them to be holy and to love their brother and sister, but we don't need to require that they make perfect grades and start on every sports team and never make a mistake on the piano, right? So anxiety is usually a big key that they're afraid that something they're going to do is going to disappoint mom and dad.
I think if you have somebody in your life who is saying, hey, I am seeing this, you know, like in your family or whatever, you need to see if there's a kernel of truth in it.
Mm-hmm.
And like I can think of one example where they did not heed that, you know, early on. And now the kid is exactly what you said. Like they're in high school and they have no affect. But if they had only listened to that wise counsel 10 years ago, it would be different.
Yeah.
I think it's really important that you have to identify you have more than one kid. Each one of them is provoked differently.
Yeah.
And our kids were from one extreme to the other.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very hard to be consistent when every one of them reacted differently to the exact same thing. So, and it created something different in each one of them.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was withdrawal, one of them was just rage. I mean, it was just like a
right.
gamut of responses. So it really came down to a knowing. You had to study your kids and know what was gonna push them over the edge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sounds like exactly what we talked about with when we're in the Proverbs, right? You got to observe and see, and that's partly why there's not a lot of real specific scripting in terms of how to parent, because there's a lot of wisdom, especially when you know that different kids, different ages, they might go through the same scenario and react differently. Yeah. Yeah, I've heard a similar, I think it's maybe Stephen Covey talked about how you have a bank and all the love and the praise and the conversations, the affection, every time you're interacting with your kid, you're making deposits in that relationship, and you're building. And once in a while, when you need to instruct or correct them in something that they maybe don't agree with or don't want to, you're gonna make a big withdrawal. And you're going to draw upon that relationship that you've built. They've learned that you love them. You know they can trust you. You have their best at heart, right? And that discipline or correction may seem unpleasant, but right. And so sometimes when we don't have a relationship, the bank account is empty, and you go to withdraw and you expect something from them. There's just nothing for them to draw on. And so there's a lot of truth in that, and that just daily consistent love and affection and discipline instruction over and over and over again is going to build that, the strength of that bond. And I think like what Chris is saying, it helps you know where you can push and can't, and what's the best way to really connect to your kids, and which ones do you need to be extra firm with, and which ones do you need to be more gentle with. That you know, some of them will crumble under a lot less pressure. And some of them need a lot more, right? A lot more pressure. Very true. Very true. Okay, I think what we will do is we will start next time. We'll finish up with the text from 1 Timothy. And then we'll go through, we'll have lots of thought questions that we can look through. So I do encourage you to read through that appendix on ways that you can or we can exasperate. It's super helpful, can be a little convicting, but also encouraging if you find that you're doing, avoiding a lot of those things. So let me pray for us. Father, I thank you for the wisdom and the truths within your scriptures and the guidance that we gain. I pray for each one of us who are parents that you give us the skill of wisdom in rightly parenting and guiding our children. Help us to apply discipline, to correct them, to protect them, to teach them from all that we can learn from scripture and from what the world around us. And help us to instruct them in the fear of the Lord and in the commands of the Lord and the instruction of the Lord. I do pray for the many here who are not yet parents, that you continually be pouring into them and preparing them to give them great wisdom on how to not only parent themselves one day, but also wisely counsel those who are parenting and beginning in parenting. And just help us to, as we've talked about before, live as a community of believers and as one large family, spiritual family, where we can help one another to raise the next generation in the fear and instruction of the Lord. And I thank you for this time. Pray that this would be a fruitful time of instruction in our lives. In your name.